I'm Jerry Barmash, and this is Hear Now the News. Concern for violence has been right under the surface since the election, as President Trump constantly refused to recognize his loss and maintained baseless claims of fraud. It culminated with a deadly uprising on the Capitol to upend the Electoral College results for Joe Biden, incited by inflammatory words from Trump and other Republicans. So now the country tries to move forward with a new administration, but questions remain as the current commander-in-chief's term winds down. A fluid situation. As this episode gets posted, House Democrats were expected to deliver articles of impeachment, putting Trump on a path to become the only sitting president impeached twice. Another form of punishment against the 45th president, Twitter permanently banning him to the risk of further incitement of violence. Today, I'm pleased to have Michelle Kaczynski join me. She's a former White House and State Department correspondent for CNN. She has plenty to say about the remarkable moment that we're living through.
I'm happy to be with you, Jerry. Really, really great to connect with you here.
Who knew when I've been watching you for all these years on CNN that one day I would have a podcast and one day you'd be here. Now you're sitting back as a citizen and you're watching what unfolded this week, as we're recording this days after what took place, the storming of the Capitol. And what was your reaction? I'm sure as millions others the same, but how did you react?
Well, it started with the election itself and the days following the election. And I you just go numb. So I'm in Switzerland. I feel like I'm a universe away. I'm in a tiny village in the mountains of Switzerland where nobody talks about politics. Nobody wants to talk about US politics except to shake their heads and be like, oh my God. And so I would watch it on TV, but I would become so sickened. Like you just get that feeling in the pit of your stomach. Just no, this can't be happening. And there's like nothing to say about it because you can't do anything about it. And like I said, there are not enough words to describe how awful it is and how wrong it is. So I couldn't watch it on television for very long. I would have to watch it in short doses and then I would get updates on Twitter. Twitter has been wonderful for getting all of the latest without having the added stress of hearing people, you know, lament about it and opine on it over and over. I just can't do it. It's so bad that I can't stomach watching television news on it anymore. So to see the storming that happened this past week and all of the things surrounding it and the Trump saying those things and the senators who got on board with him, it's that feeling that you feel sort of like victimized by it, but you also feel this deep disgust, like a special brand of disgust, because these people are supposed to be the best among us, you know? They're supposed to be there in those positions because they are a shining freaking example of patriotism, a shining example of humanity, intelligence, patience, a temperament for that job. But to see people who are just the opposite, just run like bulls through a china shop of democracy, it's a level of disgust I didn't know that I had in me.
And it seems as though, I mean, many are saying, not just the Democrats, but Republicans too, that President Trump should be accountable for this, for inciting the violence.
Yeah, and wasn't it interesting to see James Comey writing that it would be destructive for him to be held accountable? Like, oh, my reaction was just like, come on, man. I think that all of us, because the abuse has been for painful, dreadful years long, everybody has that instinct to say accountability. No, nobody wants to be vengeful, but you do have that need to see punishment, I think, to see everybody have their comeuppance in some way, because it shouldn't have happened in the first place. And everyone in this country needs to know that if you try something like this again, there are going to be consequences and huge consequences. And you know what? There are laws in this country for a reason. You break the law and oh, these people are supposed to be representing law and order in all things. Oh, and you know, they have the religious right on their side. Come on. If we're going to have laws, then people are going to need to be prosecuted for their crimes.
I mean, the president has always had a knack for pushing, even if he didn't actually say the actual, almost in code, to his followers, even to the Republicans, in this case, what would be inciting violence, and then goes as far as he can, and then finds a way to, a day or so later, pull back a bit.
Yeah, I just had to laugh at that.
Is that video, which I know some people, including on your former colleagues, calling it a hostage video, is that, at this point where we are now, is that enough to placate GOP members?
Of course not. It was terrible to watch all the way through. At this point, anything Trump says, good or bad, is outrageous, because you can't suddenly call for Americans to come together and have an orderly transition. I mean, nothing about what he has said is orderly. So if he says these things, they're so hypocritical, and they're obviously not coming from him. So that just compounds the outrage. And I find it at least a little bit comforting to see top Republicans and former cabinet members call it out. It's disingenuous, because, hey, you want to say you enabled this for your period of time. You enabled all of this. So I feel so cynical when I hear any of them speak now, because an enabler causes as much damage, you could argue, as the person who's causing it. You know, people could have stopped this a long time ago.
Yeah, and that's the thing, whether it was on the House floor when, I guess it was Senator Graham, and there were others that spoke, and now they had an about face. And it's sad, because people had to die and take over a hallowed institution, of a seat of government, for that to happen, when you could see that this was, we were on a collision course for this, maybe not to this exact moment, this exact event, but you certainly could see something like this was
definitely
a possibility. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people were worried about violence for a long time. People were worried about this exact kind of violence during the election,
right,
that there would be these armed militias coming out, trying to start the civil war that they so badly want and openly many times call for. This is no surprise at all. It's almost as if everybody telegraphed exactly what they were going to do in some way, maybe not the time and date and place, but we all saw this coming. Yep. We were all afraid it was going to happen, and sure enough, it did.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as bad as, obviously, the president is the person at the top, he's the one with the tweets and the rallies and you know, lies and then repeating lies and so forth. But a lot of the damage is because, as you say, these Republicans aiding and abetting.
Yeah, and you know what, Jerry, the Senate used to be this room full of seasoned, calm adults, where you could say as much crap is going down in the House, like, oh, these people, you know, you have freshmen coming in from their local districts. There's, you know, kind of a craziness about it sometimes in the debates, and, you know, let people fight it out in the House. Let them battle hard down there. But then when it gets to the Senate, at least we have the Senate to be the calm voices, that the sense that prevails, you know, the people with the experience that, and they will compromise and will reach an adult decision in the end. But we don't really have that anymore. We have a lot of ideologues and sycophants and you name it that want to win political points, and they're just thinking of their fame or their purity for their base, even though they really don't agree with that stuff. You have a lot of hypocrisy. So to not have the Senate necessarily be that voice of reason anymore, it's a real problem in this country. It's a real destruction that we've seen of how of the safeguards and the checks and balances that we're supposed to have. It's just, it's every time you talk about it, you know, you get so angry, and then you just feel kind of deflated because there's really nothing you can say about it. Everybody knows, everybody sees how bad this is. So it's time for people to be those adults in the room. And I like to say this starts in local offices. You have to know who you're electing from school board on up. Because once somebody wins political office, they have that certification of being somebody who's electable and who's politically sound. And then that person's going to move on to the next office. And I saw this time and time again when I was a local reporter in these local markets around the country. I would see some complete jerk elected to some office. And then sure enough, a couple of years later, that person would be in Congress. And you would know what a bad person they are, because as a reporter, you know, you've heard things and you have sources, and you may not have even reported on all of it, but you kind of know. And then you're like, how did this person get elected to the US House? And everybody just shakes their heads and is like, I know. But nobody asks themselves really, is this a worthy person? Is this person, what are they in it for? Are they a good human being? What good have they done? All of these very basic questions. We have to ask this of our candidates from the time they set foot into the swamp. Even if the edges of the swamp are just in Peoria, Illinois, somewhere on some county board, you need to know who you're voting for. And if you don't, then I'm sorry. You know, it's hard to pay attention to everything, but you're just going to be part of the problem ultimately.
You said punishment. Do you think, and as we're recording this, it's a very fluid situation. By the time this is posted, it could change five more times. The president, they've been talking about wanting the 25th Amendment. It doesn't look like the vice president will budge on that.
Right.
It seems as though they are going to go forward with impeachment.
I'm very proud of them for doing it again. I've really been impressed by the way these House Democrats have spoken and what they've tried to do. And they gave Pence a chance, and they called him and called him and tried to get through to him first. And they said exactly what they're going to do. And I think Nancy Pelosi, in the letter to her colleagues, spelled it out, you know, kind of profoundly. And you saw that she actually said, I've spoken to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff about what can we do if this guy tries to go nuclear, and I mean literally nuclear. The fact that we even have to talk about that is mind-blowing. I don't even know what words to use to describe this stuff anymore, because each day it gets worse. But the fact that she had to do that, you know, she's telling people what the risks are, what they're doing about it to try to cover their bases, because there are some very real risks out there right now. So I'm happy that they're moving forward. I really feel like no one knows what Trump is capable of at this point.
Do you think that Mike Pence, the vice president, is hurting his political aspirations in the future by not invoking the 25th Amendment?
Well, that's a good question, because I feel like he's hurt his standing by being where he is and staying with it. You know, after a while, more and more people are going to open their eyes to this not being good for the United States. So anybody who's led Trump along his path and covered up his messes and made it seem like everything's okay, I think that ultimately that's going to be a strike against them. So to say, is he hurting his future by not invoking the 25th? I mean, in my opinion, absolutely. But I feel like almost everything Pence does is not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So that's my opinion. But it just sort of, I think a lot of it depends on where the rattled Republican Party, you know, shell-shocked and just looking for a place, looking for a foundation. It depends on what they turn themselves into in the next few months and years.
I guess up until this week, again, with this tragedy that took place, this horrific scene in
at the Capitol. Up until that point, Trumpism had been alive and well. Obviously, this talk bandied about that he may run immediately during the inauguration of Joe Biden, that he would run for 2024 for the presidency. It seems as all of that is off the table. In fact, in impeachment, they could actually ban him from ever running again. They could even have an impeachment after the election. Who knows? There's a lot of options on the table. But I'll put it to you, Trumpism, where does it stand going forward?
Well, it's obviously still there. And it's not going anywhere in the near future. It's not as if all of these supporters are going to turn away. They still think that the election was rigged and stolen. You know, there's no evidence of this. So I don't know what's going to open their eyes anytime soon. I think the emergence of a new but more moderated, moderate isn't even the word, a new but less crazy leader. Is that the better word to use? I don't know. Somebody that they can rally around, but who is actually has much better leadership qualities, could sort of galvanize all of that support onto something else. But I see one of his circle, or many of his circle, absolutely trying to run down the road in the near future, whether it's Ivanka or who knows, it could be any of these people in his orbit, trying to lasso all of that support. And, you know, even if many of them don't see Trump as not their leader at this moment, all of that emotion and all of that force is going to have to be channeled somewhere else. And so I think everybody is going to be looking for, well, if it's not going to be Trump, who's the next one then?
I was just saying, I'm sure that's a lot of those people you watch when they're doing the Electoral College votes and the ones that were contesting. I'm sure there's an agenda, whether it's Senator Josh Hawley, obviously Senator Ted Cruz, those come to mind.
Of course, Ted Cruz. And maybe it's Mike Pompeo, who's trying to be the semi-adult in the room. He's trying to be the stealthy adult in the room. You know, those people have had that aspiration for a long time, obviously. So maybe they feel like, hey, this is kind of good. Now's my chance to be the next Trump, but not Trump, and gather up all of that feeling.
More for Michelle is ahead. She talks about cabinet members jumping ship in the final days of the tumultuous term and the aftermath of journalism in the wake of Trump.
You've been tweeting about Pompeo, actually, a lot of stuff that you've gathered from the time at the State Department. Tell me a little about that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it came up because of all of the tweets that he's been putting out on what he claims is the good that the Trump administration has done in foreign policy. But a lot of it is not quite the full story, to say the least. And, you know, obviously he wants to burnish his legacy, and I'm putting that in quotes, in the State Department so he can move forward. And of course he wants to paint this picture of him being this fantastic Secretary of State who accomplished so much, but come on. First of all, the way he has bent to the desires of the Saudis time and time again. The fact that he has not stood up for his own people and has gotten rid of his own people at extremely precarious times. So I could go on and on and on. And I know, you know, I think it was the New York Times and the Washington Post called him the worst Secretary of State in our history. So there's plenty of material there. But I on Twitter, I was joking, semi-joking. This part is actually true, that when I covered the State Department, Pompeo just has this attitude. Of course, he called it swagger from day one, which disgusted a lot of people at State, where he wants to be kind of the bully. He wants to be like the under Trump who is smart. And I know a lot of people who say, well, Pompeo's even worse than Donald Trump because Pompeo knows what he's doing. Hmm. And he always had this attitude, and I called it, I had this file that was just called on the fly one day, Pompeo being a bleep. And every time he said or did something that was just outrageously rude and uncalled for, or said something that was not true or said something that was just, you know, not the thing to say at that point in time, I would put it into this file. And the file got to be so big because on a daily basis, he would constantly insulting the press, no doubt to please his boss. I mean, I can just imagine Pompeo bringing this up later to Trump, like, hey, did you see what I said to Andrea Mitchell? You know, stuff like that, that you would just keep it for a file for later, like, because you couldn't believe that this was a Secretary of State behaving this way, mainly in the way he treated lawmakers when he was testifying. It was condescending to the extreme. And so I have all these little snippets, and I joked on Twitter, maybe it's time to open up that file, that right, Pompeo right. being a bleep file, and people right. just kind of went wild for it, like, yes, open the file. Well, I don't know that they realize that this is all just open source stuff. It's all just stuff that he said publicly that right. was disgusting to a lot of people. So
it's not for a book. It's already was out there.
Exactly. It's no, I do. I was about to say, it's not like I have some secrets. I do have some of those, but the stuff that I was putting out there was just terrible stuff that he had said. And I'll probably continue to do so because you just see the irony sometimes of the things that he says. And you need to counter it with the stuff that he really says when he doesn't think that the whole world is watching. Hmm. Like, maybe it was last night, I think. Yeah, that he tweeted about human rights and that we have these inalienable human rights and there are God-given human rights. And we all know that that's just his speak for not supporting the rights of gay people. And I felt, you know, like, well, if he's going to be tweeting about human rights, then I need to be tweeting about what he said about human rights back in 2015 at a God and Country rally down in Georgia, where he quoted this extremist pastor in saying that America worshiped false gods and called it multiculturalism, and America supported perversion and called it an alternate lifestyle. So there he is, the Secretary of the State of the United States, calling being gay a perversion just a couple of years earlier. And now he thinks that he's, you know, the source on human rights. And if you remember back in his confirmation hearings, he was pressed again and again on how can you be the Secretary of State if you think that a sizable portion of humanity are part of a perversion? You know, these are contributing members of society and members of your own government. How can you stand up for human rights that the United States is supposed to fight for in places elsewhere in the world where they sentence people to death for being gay or for being a woman that's speaking out? How can you stand up for rights when you believe that that is a perversion? Like, you see the disconnect, and he refused to own up to it. He refuses to own comments that he has made in the past. Whether he believes those comments, I don't know, but he clearly tries to make political points wherever he goes.
I'm assuming you don't think as many in the cabinet, the White House cabinet, have resigned. I'm assuming you don't think that Pompeo will be one of those. And what do you think of those that have?
Well, I don't know. I think he will, personally.
Well,
it's really hard to say because you know that every single day people like him are contemplating, what does this mean for me? How does it look for me? And what is it going to mean for my political future? So that changes day to day. You know, it depends on the winds of public outcry. And how is it better for me? And I find it so disgusting, to say the least, and so disingenuous that people are wanting to be the hero now, mm-hmm. whether it's by resigning in the last days of the Trump administration or by speaking out now. Oh, you're not a hero, okay? You're not a hero for trying to do the right thing now. The right time for being the hero and for speaking out was, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago. on the outlier, and many, many, many benchmarks right. in between, where you could have been the hero.
Right. And certainly since the election, I mean, the goalpost yeah. has been pushed and pushed and pushed.
Exactly.
You know, even Mitch McConnell, when he spoke on the floor, all of a sudden it was like a different person. Great, but why now? And that's sort yeah. of where we are with any of these people.
It's painful. It's painful for people to watch. And I think that's why so many people eventually tune out, because who can be trusted? I really think, you know, the media has done its part to have to win and keep people's trust, because you have entities out there like Fox News, of course, but politicians now have to win back people's trust. And I feel sorry for all of the good politicians out there. Is politician a dirty word? I don't know. I'm not using it as one. Although sometimes I kind of do. And it's a shame, because I don't mean to do that. There are so many good public servants out there, and I know them personally. And I've seen the good that they've done, even behind the scenes, even when nobody's watching. Those are the kinds of things that I wish got out more, because I think what gets out there in force on the airwaves in the United States is only the controversy and only the scandal. And you don't really, I think that the voices of public servants that are really trying to do good things for all Americans get drowned out very quickly.
Do you think it's hard for, you mentioned this, and I just wanted to pick up on, for the media, when you've got the Foxes and the OANNs and obviously Newsmax, you know, and the other side, I don't want to call left wing, but, you know, the CNN's trying to be right in the middle, MSNBC's and all the other major networks, when you know that there is the chance you're going to get these bashing, you know, tweets and things. I mean, I posted this, an episode I did with a psychiatrist who was part of a 30 some odd mental health professionals recently. There was a book they did,
right.
the dangerous case of Donald Trump. And on LinkedIn, of all places, it went off with 150 negative comments all about the psychiatrist and me. Wow. And so on. So, yeah. You know, so that's going to happen. And I guess this is what happens now with media, where with him saying fake news media and so forth, right?
Yeah, it just comes with the territory. There's always been sensational journalism, and it kind of, the pendulum swings back and forth. And now we've entered this era of splintered and very niche targeted media. And I don't think any of it's a bad thing necessarily. You just have to make sure that you start educating people from the time they're literally children to consider your source. I think there's this sort of leftover feeling that you trust what's coming out of your television. And well, if it was on Fox News or OANN, you know, it was reported. Well, it's just not true. And it's hard to convince people of that, because they want to trust what they see on the news. But of course, the news doesn't mean what it used to mean. There used to be just a couple of sources that kept each other in check. And, you know, there wasn't as much to look at. So as people have pushed the envelope, I always laugh when people blame or make a statement about the media. Well, the media is not one thing anymore. The media is like, you know, it's like a million atoms all spread out in, you know, this tiny space. And they're far, even though they look like they're one thing, they're really separated from each other. They're not the same. And so I always find it sad to see the comments about that. But I just think there's a curve, and people will learn from these experiences that you need entities like the New York Times and the Washington Post that have been just the, you know, exceptional. They've been these bright lights. I don't mean to sound cheesy, but they have been what they're supposed to be, the guardians of our democracy. They have backed up what they've printed. They have called out every single one of Trump's lies, and they have the kinds of sources and respect to keep being, you know, reliable sources of information. Like, thank God we have them, and they haven't folded. If we had to rely on a million niche publications,
right.
It's hard for, nobody has the time to survey the entire landscape of news and try to get like, you know, this vastly balanced portrait of any given story. It's no, who has time for that? You just want to turn on something or read something you can trust. And unfortunately, you know, these right wing organizations have tainted that. They really tainted people's ability to trust in the press.
My thanks to Michelle Kaczynski for her openness about the final days of the Trump White House. There's much more with Michelle on her decision to leave CNN, what she's doing today, and why she's hopeful the U.S. will rid itself of these dark days. Part 2 is available Tuesday, January 12th. Questions, comments, suggestions, you know how to reach me. Twitter at Jerry Barnash, email hearnowthenewsjb@gmail.com. and my Hear Now the News Facebook page, where you'll find occasional live streams. Thanks for your support and listening. Please share the episode with a friend. This is Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barnes.